The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show, coming to you live from beautiful Edstone. Just a gorgeous day today, the last day of the work week, already at Friday. On today's show, later on in the program, we're going to look more closely at Herbert W. Armstrong's early training as an advertising man. I touched on this a couple days ago. And hopefully we can save some time for the final segment to look into some of that history, some that's covered in Raising the Ruins, a couple of clips that we've turned up, and just some pretty amazing examples taken right out of the autobiography. So that's coming up later on today's program. Also, I'd like to just refer you to Brent Noctegal's piece at thetrumpet.com today. I think it's the second or third feature by about this time. But his article, Haaretz Hit Job on the Bible, and this is an Israeli newspaper that's quite skeptical, scoffing at some of the recent discoveries having to do with the authenticity of the Bible, in particular with the House of David. So we have a lot to say, obviously, in this church about King David and his reign and all of that history, and have been involved extensively in Dr. Eilat Mazar's excavations there in Jerusalem, in the city of David. And so Brent comes out with a strong defense of Dr. Mazar and her work aimed at this attack coming from Haaretz, one of the leading Israeli papers. I think it is, in fact, the leading paper in Israel. Well, we need to catch up on what's been happening with Iran and ISIS being pushed out of Iraq and Syria. Basically, what's been happening in the Middle East over the past few weeks. And as we roll through this, you'll see once again how that Bible prophecy was right all along. It's just like we've been saying for so many years, decades, in fact, in the case of some of these prophecies, specifically with the King of the South. Well, if you go back two weeks ago, President Trump, he gave a speech outlining his new Iran strategy. And really, there's some parts of the speech that are actually quite good. But basically, nothing really has come from that speech, not yet, and all that it basically did was start a 60-day clock for Congress to decide whether or not to reject the Iran nuke deal. The president said if they don't comply with some of the requirements in this deal, that he could end up killing it. He made this statement: in the event we are not able to reach a solution working with Congress and our allies, then the agreement will be terminated. So there's a lot in play here. Of course, there's European leaders who don't want to see the deal get killed. And yet, President Trump is trying to follow through on so much of his campaign rhetoric, where he said it was, the worst deal in the history of American foreign policy and so on. In any event, the parts of his speech that I wanted to focus in on, the good parts where he talked about all that Iran is responsible for with respect to international terrorism. So this takes us back to October 13th. That would have been 2 weeks ago today. This is clip 11.
The regime harbored high-level terrorists in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, including Osama bin Laden's son. In Iraq and Afghanistan, groups supported by Iran have killed hundreds of American military personnel. The Iranian dictatorship's aggression continues to this day. the regime remains the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism and provides assistance to al-Qaeda, the Taliban, Hezbollah, Hamas, and other terrorist networks. It develops, deploys, and proliferates missiles that threaten American troops and our allies. It harasses American ships and threatens freedom of navigation in the Arabian Gulf and in the Red Sea. It imprisons Americans on false charges, and it launches cyber attacks against our critical infrastructure, financial system, and military.
And all of that's absolutely true. I mean, in this speech, he singled out Iran's Revolutionary Guard for its sponsorship of all the international terrorism, and basically all but labeled that Revolutionary Guard a terrorist organization. He went on to say this in the same speech, clip 12.
The United States is far from the only target of the Iranian dictatorship's long campaign of bloodshed. The regime violently suppresses its own citizens. It shot unarmed student protesters in the street during the Green Revolution. This regime has fueled sectarian violence in Iraq and vicious civil wars in Yemen and Syria. In Syria, the Iranian regime has supported the atrocities of Bashar al-Assad's regime and condoned Assad's use of chemical weapons against helpless civilians, including many, many children.
And then you add to that that they're furiously at work building a nuclear bomb. So it's a great speech, but as Carolyn Glick noted last week, you know, on the one hand, you have the strong words, and then on the other hand, what about the actions? What about the actions, not only of the United States, but of Iran as well? Again, keep in mind, ISIS is being pushed out. They've basically been squashed, and largely because of U.S. action in Iraq and Syria, bombing campaigns and such. The day after that speech, again, that was given 2 weeks ago. It was the day after this speech, and we touched on this about a week ago on this program. But that's when the Iranian-led militias landed in the Kurdish city of Kirkuk. This is in Iraq, but it's controlled, that northern part of Iraq, controlled largely by the Kurds. And so here come these Iranian militias headed up by Qassem Soleimani. He commands the Quds Force. He rolls in there. Now, in the lead up to that, we also touched on this previously on the program, the September 25th referendum. I mean, following the demise of ISIS, the Kurds thought, well, what better time to call for this referendum on Kurdish independence? Because the U.S. owes us. I mean, we've been fighting. I think they sacrificed something like 1,700 lives, the Kurds, in fighting ISIS there in northern Iraq. And so the referendum happens on September 25th. Some 93% of Iraq's Kurds voted in favor of independence. And the Kurds, I mean, there's basically two factions that oftentimes are at each other's throats. But even the two came together for this vote. And as Carolyn Glick notes in her column from last week, General Soleimani rolls into Kirkuk. He immediately sides with one of the Kurdish factions, drives a wedge between the two, gets them to side with him, basically, with Iraq controlling the area as opposed to the Kurds. And she describes some of this. Basically, he neutralized the Kurds, and they backed off, and it basically gave Kirkuk over to Iran. Carolyn Glick said last week, so 2 days after Trump's speech, that October 13th speech, 2 days after Trump's speech, the Iranians and the Talibani family, that's from that one Kurdish faction, the Talibani family agreed to split Iraq's Kurds in two and set up an Iranian puppet in the new governing authority, killing any thought of an independent Kurdistan. And of course, as far as Kurdish independence goes, the U.S. came out strongly opposed to that referendum. And again, I don't want to go over and rehash all of this again. We've talked about it previously. I mean, if anyone's deserving of a state, it would be the Kurdish people. In any event, the United States said, no way. We don't support this. Carolyn Glick says here, despite Trump's stated position in favor of weakening Iranian power and influence, like I just played for you, he said it quite strongly in that speech. We want to weaken Iran's power and their influence. And she says, despite this strong rhetoric, and despite the fact that the occupation of Kirkuk was directed by the IRGC, which Trump just sanctioned, it says the Americans to date seem fine with the outcome. I mean, they came out strongly against the referendum from last month. Then Iranian-backed militias roll in there. Less than 2 weeks ago, and the United States basically says, they say nothing. Well, this week we did say something. I'll come to that here in just a second. But as it is, I mean, that's about all that we have. The United States has no appetite for further fighting in Iraq or Syria. And so who are we effectively handing it over to? If you've listened to this program, or if you've followed thetrumpet.com, or if you've read our magazines, of course you know the answer to that. It's prophesied. Carolyn Glick said last week, it's true that the U.S. Has never gone out on a limb for its Kurdish allies. Well, she goes on and talks about the many sacrifices that the Kurds have made and how that they've been the U.S.'s most dependable ally in the region. Their only dependable ally. That it says here, Iran's successful neutralization of the Kurds clears away the only major obstacle to Iranian hegemony over Iraq. She says this development has major implications for the region. Trump can claim till he's blue in the face that he has abandoned Obama's Iran policy. But so long as Iraqi government forces control Kirkuk for Iran, his claims only discredit him. And so Iran just continues to expand its influence all across the region. Now, earlier this week, the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, he was in Iraq. And here again, you talk about some strong rhetoric. Notice what he had to say now that ISIS has been squashed. This is clip one.
Certainly, Iranian militias that are in Iraq, now that the fight against Daesh and ISIS is coming to a close, those militias need to go home. Any foreign fighters in Iraq need to go home and allow the Iraqi people to regain control of areas that had been overtaken by ISIS and Daesh that have now been liberated. Allow the Iraqi people to rebuild their lives with the help of their neighbors.
And so Iraq has now been liberated, and as Secretary of State Tillerson said there, the militias need to go home. The Iranian militias need to go home. And do you know how the Iraqi Prime Minister, how he responded to this? This is Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi, and he came out with a statement following what Mr. Tillerson said there on Monday, saying that these militias are part of the Iraqi institutions. He said that they should be encouraged because they are the hope of the country and the region. So here he's basically a stooge of the mullahs in Tehran. And he comes out and says, look, we're not going to tell them to go home. They're the hope of the future, these Iranian militias. General Soleimani. They're running the show. One of the most powerful militia leaders there in the nation, in Iraq. He took it a step further than the prime minister, saying that if anybody should go home, it should be the Americans. How about that? He's quoted as saying, "Your armed forces have to prepare from this point immediately and without any delay to leave our homeland, Iraq, after the end of the excuse of the ISIS presence." That's this leading militia man who says, you Americans need to leave. It's not the Iranians. It's the Americans who should leave. Now, Liz Sly had a piece at the Washington Post just today saying that the U.S. is on a collision course with Iran in the Middle East. And we'll look at that story here in just a bit. But first, here again, I've got to take you back to some of the history at thetrumpet.com. As I said at the top, Bible prophecy is right again. Right again. Who was telling you right at the early stages of this ISIS movement, the so-called Islamic State? Who was telling you early on, even when we were seeing footage of beheadings and people being burned alive and ISIS gaining headlines from all over the world, sponsoring terrorist activities here in Europe? And who was telling you that really all of this is just a huge distraction? My father, this is from a year and a half ago, April 3rd, 2016, at thetrumpet.com. He said, "Iran will gladly allow the Islamic State to continue its rampage of carnage and violence because it serves as a distraction from Iran's rapidly developing nuclear program. Make no mistake about it, Iran is by far the biggest Islamist threat. Despite the Islamic State's appalling barbarism, Iran is still the number one state sponsor of terrorism in the world. Distracted by the Islamic State, America and Europe have paved the way for the maniacal nation of Iran to get the nuclear bomb." That's something that we had at thetrumpet.com just a year and a half ago. And even earlier than that, here again, this is the earliest stages of the Islamic State's uprising, from my father's Key of David program, October 10th, 2014. So about 3 years ago, almost to the day. Here's what my father said 3 years ago on his television program, clip two.
"We see the ISIS terrorists doing all of these violent acts and all of the bloodshed, cutting off people's heads, and it really has attracted the attention of this world, but in many ways it is a distraction from the real danger in the Middle East and in the world."
That's right, the real danger, which is Iran, as the Washington Post had in its newspaper today. Now the U.S. is on a collision course with Iran. Okay, ISIS is out of the way, so what's next? Well, you go back 3 years ago. ISIS, as I said, is all over the news. Who else was telling you that they were a distraction? And where is ISIS today? My father continued. This was from 2015, February 26th, 2015. Again, from his Key of David program, clip three.
"But there is a U.S. general who said that the face of radical Islam is now ISIS. But I disagree with that strongly. The face of radical Islam is still Iran many times over, and the Bible tells you that, because Iran is the king of the South or the Middle East. But also history tells us that. And just the what is happening on the world scene tells us that even right now."
That's from early 2015. I strongly disagree, my father said. I mean, look at the big picture. Okay, there's some beheadings that are getting some headlines and some appalling footage that people are seeing. But how do you compare one beheading with a radical Islamist regime that's pushing to get a nuclear bomb. Bible prophecy told us. Well, even history. You look at, as he said there, you look at what's happening on the world scene. Here's another clip from that same program, February of 2015, clip four.
But if you look at ISIS, well, they don't even have an air force. And they, in many ways, are a distraction. Now, they are dangerous, no question about that. But in many ways, they are a distraction of what is happening in the Middle East through Iran. And we need to understand this because this is going to affect every single one of us. Now, if you look at ISIS today, they're like a mouse compared to the Iranian tiger. There is no comparison.
No comparison. Again, a message that you just weren't getting anywhere else except from this church, except from God's Word, except from Bible prophecy. So they were on the rise. And they, as he said, they certainly were dangerous, no question about that. And so you have the United States working, particularly once the new president came along. But even before that, basically you had the United States training Iraqi forces and then working alongside Iranian militias. That's right. Basically for the last 3 years, the United States has been on the side of Iran. And no wonder Iran has been in no hurry to push ISIS out. Well, now President Trump comes along. He says we've got to crush ISIS. And so now that's finally happened. But what next? What happens next for America? What happens next for Iraq? And is Iran now weaker? Is Iran in a weaker position? They just ran the Kurds out of Kirkuk. They just pushed the Kurds out. They've had control over northern Iraq for years. Brad McDonald had a piece in 2016, again, a year and a half ago or so, the Islamic State and Iran on the same team. I mean, how does the United States get drawn into these kinds of arrangements? Here is, as you just heard at the top of the program, the number one state sponsor of terrorism. And incredibly, the United States for the past 3 years has been working alongside them to get rid of ISIS. And as Brad McDonald said last summer, look, they're on the same team, the Islamic State and Iran. And he pointed out last year, the West, okay, the United States, it considers the Islamic State this grave threat. It considers it now the face of radical Islam. And only at thetrumpet.com and only on my father's Key of David program did you hear, I strongly disagree with that assessment. It's like comparing a mouse to a tiger. I mean, really? In Brad McDonald's piece, July 2016, he said, it's dangerous to assume that Iran thinks the same way about the Islamic State as the West does. The truth is, the Islamic State's rise has proven enormously beneficial to Iran, the world's top state sponsor of terrorism. And so great, ISIS is crushed, and the Trump administration takes a victory lap. And now, as the Washington Post notes this morning, you have the United States on a collision course with Iran. Who could have possibly predicted this? Brad McDonald says, first, the Islamic State has distracted America and the West from Iran's terrorist activities. Thanks to ISIS, Iran is no longer on the West radar as a terrorist threat. I mean, look at what happened while ISIS was getting all the headlines. You had the worst foreign policy deal struck between the United States and Iran in American history. That happened under the previous administration. And now Trump succeeds President Obama. He comes in and is largely responsible for wiping out ISIS. But now what? Now look. The nuclear deal's still in place. Iran's quest for the nuclear bomb. They're still on track. They're expanding their influence all across Iraq, Syria, and on through to Lebanon. Because, again, you don't see this hardly anywhere except at thetrumpet.com. They're building a corridor, a land bridge all the way through to the Mediterranean. A land bridge that Iran controls. After all is said and done, after all these years with the Syrian civil war, after all these years that ISIS has been getting headlines, after all these years that America was in Iraq training Iraqi militia, or rather Iraqi the Iraqi military, and now finally America says we can finally put some closure on this. We can finally leave. I think it's just down to a few thousand troops that are in the region. And Rex Tillerson goes over there this week and says, okay, the war with ISIS is over. The Iranian militias can go home. And the Iraqi prime minister says, no, thank you. In fact, we'd rather you go home. Who could have seen this coming? Brad McDonald says, second, the presence of the Islamic State gives Iran an opportunity to refashion its reputation in the region and globally. Iran's leaders regularly deliver statements promising to defend the persecuted from the Islamic State and to bring stability to Iraq and the broader region. Tehran is exploiting the violence and instability created by ISIS to cast itself as the region's savior. That's the way they're viewed. That's the way they're viewed. The prime minister himself said as much this week. They're the future. Iran is the future. Those Iranian militia leaders, they're the future of this country, Iraq. And one of those leading militia members says, you Americans, we'd rather say goodbye to you. Brad McDonald says here, finally, third, the rise of the Islamic State has provided Iran with the opportunity to bolster its military presence in Iraq and Syria. I mean, is this forecast from a year and a half ago, is this spot on or what? Look at what's happened. Look at what's happened. Who was telling you 3 years ago that the rise of the Islamic State would, in the end, make Iran stronger? It would make Iran, the king of the south, stronger. Who would have thought that the emergence of ISIS would enable Iran to extract, well, just all kinds of concessions from the United States? Here, General Soleimani, a week and a half ago, he waltzes right into Kirkuk, strikes a deal with half the Kurds. The Americans, I guess they're fine with it. They certainly didn't denounce it. They did denounce the Kurdish referendum. Well, we had a strong position on that. Our only dependable ally in the region. But never mind that. Iran waltzes in to this northern Iraqi town and says, we're in control now. And the United States evidently is A-okay with that. Just to finish here. From Brad's piece, it says, Iran has no interest in eliminating the Islamic State from the Middle East and certainly not from Europe or the West. Iran has two basic ambitions. First, it wants to be the dominant power in the Middle East. Second, it wants to undermine and destroy Israel, America, and the West. Right now, the presence of the Islamic State is helping Iran achieve those ambitions. What a boost the Islamic State has been to the King of the South. What a boost. I mean, it's enabled the Iranian king to achieve its ambitions. Now this, again, the reason this forecast all through this rise and fall of ISIS has been spot on is because it's based on a prophecy in Daniel 11 and verse 40 about the King of the South. And something my father said over 20 years ago, that Iran would undoubtedly lead the King of the South. Iran would be the head of radical Islam. Not ISIS. Not any other nation. It's Iran that's devouring territory in the region. as far back as 2003. That was perhaps when the U.S. was at its strongest in the region. This is just a couple years after 9/11. And with the fall of Saddam Hussein and the U.S. presence seemingly everywhere, my father said it may seem shocking given the U.S. presence in the region now, but prophecy indicates that in pursuit of its goal, Iran will probably take over Iraq. And now that's happened. At least it will have a heavy influence over the Iraqi people. See, it's happened. Just as we were saying in 2003. Just as we said last year, when then President-elect Trump, just a few weeks from being inaugurated, was talking about, hey, we're going to take care of this ISIS problem. This is what my father had to say on the Key of David last year, clip 5.
And even today, Mr. Trump talks about taking care of ISIS. I haven't heard him say much of anything about Iran, about taking some measures to stop them because they're getting control of the entire Middle East and they're supporting terrorism 10,000 times more than ISIS. If you look at the big picture.
Yes, indeed, the big picture. And so ISIS is now gone for the most part. And 2 weeks ago, at least, you had President Trump saying some strong things regarding Iran and its state sponsorship of international terror. But like Carolyn Glick noted last week, words and action. Strong words, okay, but what about the action? What about just stepping aside as General Soleimani waltzes into Kirkuk? Because that's what's happened. What about strong words this week, saying those Iranian militias need to go? And then the response from Iraq immediately is just right back in the United States' face. You get out of here. You Americans leave. The Iranians are our future. Pretty amazing. This Liz Sly piece at the Washington Post. The U.S. is on collision course with Iran. She says here, President Trump's assertive new strategy toward Iran is already colliding with the reality of Tehran's vastly expanded influence in the Middle East as a result of the Islamic State war. The launch of the strategy signaled, this is basically the October 13th speech 2 weeks ago. I played a couple clips at the top of the show. But she says here, the launch of the strategy signaled an important shift in the Middle East, in U.S. Middle East policy, away from an almost exclusive focus on fighting the Islamic State to an effort that also pushes back against years of Iranian expansion in the region. So for years, for the last few years, America's focus exclusively has been on fighting the Islamic State. What a distraction. What a diversion away from the real threat, the tiger, the Iranian tiger. As we've spent the last 3 years chasing the mouse, chasing away the mouse. And now the tiger is left to roam. It says, but the strategy offers no specifics for how to confront Iran's pervasive presence on the ground in Iraq, Syria, and beyond, raising questions about how easy it will be to push back against Iranian influence without triggering new conflicts. In other words, Iran is well positioned right now. It's got its footprint all over the region. And President Trump comes out with this new strategy 2 weeks ago and some strong rhetoric, but what's missing from that speech? What's missing from the speech? Is any way of a strategy about the specifics about how to push back against Iran? I mean, even the Iran nuke deal, he didn't kill it. That's what he campaigned on. He worded it in a way where he could please his followers, his supporters, those who voted for him. Oh, well, I came out and denounced that deal for sure. It's still in place. And furthermore, there's no specifics about how to push back on the ground. It says the rising tensions, well, she just talks about how that this could lead to conflicts between the United States and Iran, similar to those proxy wars that we saw in the 1980s with the Beirut bombing and such like that. It says later on, in the 3 years since the United States intervened in both countries to roll back the Islamic State, that's been the focus now for the past 3 years. It says Iran, this is what Iran's been doing. While the U.S. has focused on the Islamic State, she says Iran has dispatched tens of thousands of allied militia fighters to the battlefield, asserting its presence in vast swaths of territory not previously regarded as within Iran's traditional orbit of influence. It's been expanding its influence. It's been sending tens of thousands of troops out to Iraq, out to Syria, taking over Yemen. I mean, just devouring large chunks of territory all across the Middle East. It says here, Iranian-backed Shiite militias have fanned out into the Sunni and Christian areas of northern and western Iraq that were freed from Islamic State control, often with the help of U.S. airstrikes. Iran, Iranian troops, Iranian forces, General Soleimani, benefiting from the help of U.S. airstrikes. It says now these forces are aiding efforts by the Iraqi government to reclaim territory that has been controlled by U.S. allied Kurds since as long ago as 1991. And now the Kurds, of all people, are backpedaling. Now the Kurds, of all people, are being driven back. It says Iran has already asserted itself as a major player in Syria by supplying, arming, and training the tens of thousands of militia fighters that have proved instrumental in securing President Bashar al-Assad's hold on power. Alongside Assad's army, they are now in a race with the U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces to capture the last stretch of Islamic State territory in eastern Syria. And here's where it talks about the land bridge. There, they hope to link up with other Iraqi allies to secure a land bridge between Tehran and their Lebanese ally Hezbollah in Beirut, securing an arc of continuous Iranian influence that stretches all the way to the Mediterranean. And, of course, you can read all about that at thetrumpet.com. We've been right on top of it. Just to finish with Liz Sly's piece here, it says, in all of their maneuvers, the militias are operating with the blessing of the sovereign governments, making it hard to discern where Iran's agency begins and the government's ends. The relationships are, however, part of a deliberate strategy by Iran to wield influence through local proxies that operate in cooperation with governments, said Mohammed Obed, a Beirut-based political analyst who is close to Hezbollah, much in the way that the Iranian-backed Hezbollah has woven itself into the fabric of the Lebanese state. Iran's allies in Syria and Iraq are establishing themselves as vital but parallel components of the national security forces, he said. And his assessment's spot on. They've woven, look at Hezbollah's now in government there in Lebanon. And Iran has woven itself so much into the fabric there of Iraqi government that you have the Iraqi prime minister telling the U.S. forces to get out. Or at least saying, look, we want to keep those Iranian militias here. They're the future. He leaves it to one of his militiamen to denounce the U.S. presence, to call for the United States to leave. It quotes this analyst from Beirut as saying that they're succeeding. This is Iran in Iraq. They are succeeding in what they wanted to do, which was to spread their influence throughout the region. I mean, how many newspaper articles have we quoted over the years that have basically made this same point. I mean, we're just bringing it right up to date today. But Iran is succeeding. Iran is embedding itself into the fabric of Iraq. They're expanding their influence all across the region. It says later on, Tehran is nonetheless in a strong position to push back against any U.S. efforts to curb its reach, said Jennifer Caffarella of the Institute for the Study of War. It quotes her as saying, the bottom line is that the U.S. strategy against ISIS empowered Iran in the region by accepting Iran as a de facto partner in the fight against ISIS, which is exactly what we were saying on the Key of David 2-3 years ago, which is exactly what we've been saying at thetrumpet.com over the last 3 years. I mean, Iran is our de facto partner in taking out ISIS. She says, and American leverage has been decreasing proportionate to the territory taken away from ISIS. See, the dust is now settling, isn't it? And it's proving what we were saying in 2014, in 2015, in 2016. She goes on and points out how the U.S. military maintains a presence of, I think, 5,000 troops in Iraq. And there's 500 special operations troops in Syria. That's it. That's all that's left of the American forces. Iran, as I read earlier, since this fight against ISIS, it's been pouring tens of thousands of troops into the region, Syria and Iraq. It's used this as an excuse to take over, basically, to take over militarily. And meanwhile, the U.S. forces, but for the airstrikes here and there, the U.S. forces, it's dwindled down to just a little over 5,000. Do you think the U.S. has an appetite to really put boots on the ground, to push back Soleimani, to push back Iranian militias, to actually follow through on what Secretary of State Tillerson said on Monday, that those Iranian militias need to leave? They need to go home. The war against ISIS is over. But what good is that kind of a statement if you don't have the strength and the power to back it up? If you don't back up those strong words with action, I mean, any way you look at it, the U.S., if you look at just the numbers on the ground, the U.S. is going to be heavily outnumbered. As she brings out in her piece, it says, any attempt to challenge Iran in Iraq and Syria will have a very negative effect on the existence of American forces in the region. That's quoting from Obed, that analyst from Beirut. She says they're, or rather he says, they're surrounded by Iranians. We're surrounded by Iran now. All these areas that they now control, we're outnumbered. We're surrounded. It has one final quote here from another man at a think tank. He's quoted as saying, no amount of strategizing and boots on the ground, short of an invasion, is going to push back against Iran's ability to shape events in Baghdad and all over Iraq. And short of the U.S. Army marching on Damascus, Iran will not be ripped from Syria or Lebanon. Pretty amazing analysis. That's from the Washington Post just this morning. And it's important, as I covered earlier, it's important that we go back and that we get some of the history from thetrumpet.com, from the Key of David program. Because as I said at the start of the segment, as I said at the top of the show, once again, Bible prophecy is right. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments, feedback, anything you like, to td@kpcg.fm. Some people also send me some helpful links to news stories that they think we might be interested in here for the program. So if you have any tips that you'd like to send us, again, you can send those to td@kpcg.fm. trumpetdaily.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
We don't realize, and this world doesn't realize, how much Iran is ruling the Middle East and taking it over and giving it over to the most vile kind of terrorism and war.
That's my father from 2011, and maybe we better realize it today. I mean, judging by what President Trump said 2 weeks ago, and judging by what the Washington Post said this morning, perhaps we're beginning to realize just how much Iran is ruling. It's ruling the Middle East. It's taking over the Middle East. Again, that was from one of my father's shows 6 years ago. Here's another snippet from that same program, clip 7.
Well, now that's a deadly change that is taking place in the Middle East. And what most people still do not understand is that Iran rules the Middle East. And they are going to drag nations into war. I mean, look at where they're going and how they're pushing, as Daniel says, over and over and over, and it could bring the whole world into a World War III because they're about to get nuclear bombs.
That's that same program from 2011. He referenced there the verse there at the end of Daniel 11. About the Iranian push. Here again, you step back, you look at the bigger picture. You can't get distracted by the mice. You've got to look at the Iranian tiger. You've got to look at radical Islam. You've got to look at the number one state sponsor of terror that's about to get nuclear bombs and the pushing. Push after push after push. Daniel 11:40 says, "And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and overflow and pass over." I mean, there are some nations prepared to confront this beast. And Carolyn Glick notes that in her article. She says, this is the one she wrote last week that I quoted in the first segment. She says, you know, Israel's standing up to some degree. Really, Benjamin Netanyahu, he's the only one. He's the only one that's been saying, besides the trumpet, he's the only one that's been saying ISIS is a distraction. Because as he's pointed out, what happens if you give ISIS a nuclear bomb? My father's made that same point. then you're talking about a threat. Then you're talking about something that can wipe out entire nations. Well, the nations that are going to confront it, it'll be headed up by Germany, the King of the North, the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. And so this threat, this spreading influence of the King of the South, it will be confronted eventually, but right now, boy, it is getting its way. It's having its way in the region for sure. One final clip here from my father's 2011 article, or program rather, clip 8.
Iran, the number one state sponsor of terrorism by far, has bludgeoned its way into controlling Lebanon and Gaza and has become the backbone of Syrian terrorism. Iran also has bombed and butchered its way into the dominant role in Iraq and Afghanistan and is empowering the Muslim Brotherhood terrorism to get control of Egypt. Now, America and the West have paved the way for another Iranian victory in Libya.
It's just all over the region. That's dated. That's 2011. Libya, Egypt, Afghanistan, Syria, Lebanon, Gaza. Now you add to that northern Iraq, that corridor from Iraq through Syria on through Lebanon to the Mediterranean Sea. You throw in Yemen. It's building. It's building to the clash. It's going to be the trigger that sets off World War III. That's why our focus has been there from the beginning. That's why even when ISIS was at its peak, as dangerous as that group was, still, we were pointing you to the head of the snake. We were pointing you to the Iranian tiger. And again, look at how accurate that forecast was and is. Once again, Bible prophecy was right. Well, you may have noticed that I didn't exactly allow myself enough time to get into this section, this Bible study that I was going to go through on Herbert Armstrong's background and upbringing, his early training in advertising, and just some of the criticism that his successors had for his background, going back to the 1920s, going back to even before that. The 1920s, the 1930s, we'll obviously have to make some time for that on one of our programs next week. So you have that you can look forward to. My apologies for taking a little bit of extra time with this subject that we covered here today. It's an important one. I mean, you talk about electrifying prophecies that are being fulfilled. That's what we're talking about here. It is exciting when you think about just how fast these prophecies are moving. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, in fact, some of you may recall, I often, or at least months ago, would send out an assignment over the weekend. Send us an email. Let us know what you think about the program. TD@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.